We are reading in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 23, Maharaj Prithu's Going Back Home. And this morning is text number 16. Kani Akashe Drovam Toye Yatta Stanam Vibhagashaha Shittim Ambasi Tat Tejasi Ado Vayao Navasi Amum Kanyakashe Drubam Toye
Kanyakashe Drubam Toye
Yathastanam Vibhagashah
Yathastanam Vibhagashah
Chittimam Vasita Tejas Yadovayau Navasyamum That's the only way to do it. Really, put the Y in. Otherwise, you have an extra syllable. Kanyakashe Dravam Toye
Kanyakashe Dravam Toye
Yatastanam Vibhagasha Shittimam Basita Tejas Yaddo vayo navasyamum Kanyakashe drubam toye Yathastanam vibhagashah Shittimam basita tejas Yaddo vayo navasyamum
Kanyakashe
Dhruvam Toye
Yathastanam
Vibhagashah
Yathimam
Vasita Tejas Yaddo Vayo Navasyamum
Kanyakashe
Dhruvam Toye Yathastanam Vibhagashah Imam Vasita Tejasi Yato Vayo Navasyamum Kanyakashe Dhruvam Toye Yathastanam Vibhagashah Yathimam Vasita Tejas Yaddo Vayo Navasyamum Kani. The different holes in the body for the sense organs. Akashe in the sky. Dravam the liquid substance. Toye in the water. Yathastanam according to proper situation. Vibhagashah as they are divided. Shittim earth. Ambasi in the water. Tat that. Tejasi in the fire. Adaha the fire. Vayau in the air. Nabasi in the sky. Amum that. Translation. In this way, according to the different positions of the various parts of the body, Satyatu Maharaj merged the holes of his senses with the sky. His bodily liquids, such as blood and various secretions, with the totality of water. And he merged the earth with water, then water with fire, fire with air, air with sky, and so on. Srila Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, two words are very important. Yathastanam vibhagashaha. In Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, fifth chapter, Lord Brahma clearly explains to Narada how the creation took place. And he explained one step after another the proper divisions of the senses, the controller of the senses, the object of the senses, and the material elements. And he also explained how they are created one after another. The air from the sky, the fire from the air, the water from the fire, the earth from the water, and so on. It is important to know thoroughly the process of creation as it applies to the cosmic manifestation. Similarly, this body is also created according to the same process by the Supreme Lord. The personality of Godhead, after entering the universe, creates the cosmic manifestations one after another. Similarly, the living entity, after entering a womb of a mother, also collects his gross and subtle bodies, taking ingredients from the totality of sky, air, fire, water, and earth. The words vitastanam vibhagashaha indicate that one should know the process of creation and should meditate upon the creative process inversely and thus become free from material contamination. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Chinamani Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivishesha Srinivari Pachacha De Sacharani Om Gyanam Chinmaran Dasya Gananjana Shulakaya Chaksuru Nivitam Jainam Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Vanshakalpa Kudyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vajaputitanam Bhavani Vyo Vaishnave Vyo Namo Namaha. So now this is describing how Prithvi Maharaj left his body. This is also, this process is described a number of times actually in Bhagavatam, in the second canto. Is described, and here again we see it. Also, even in the first canto, this is how Dhritarashtra left his body. So it's a kind of yoga process, how yogis leave their body. But in this case, and in other cases, the yogis who do this are sometimes devotees. Prabhupada calls them mystic bhakti yogis, because they practice the Ashtanga yoga system, but they do it as devotees. And so they leave their bodies in this way. So I'll go back to text 13. In due course of time, when Prithu Maharaj was to give up his body, he fixed his mind firmly upon the lotus feet of Krishna, and thus completely situated on the Brahma-Bhuta platform, he gave up the material body. So that's the general description of what happens. Now, more particularly, when Maharaj Prithu practiced a particular yogic sitting posture, He blocked the doors of his anus with his ankles, pressed his right and left calves, and gradually raised his life air upward, passing it onto the circle of his navel, up to his heart, then throat, and finally pushed it upwards to the cerebral position between the two eyebrows. In this way, Prithvi Maharaj gradually raised his air of life up to the hole in his skull, whereupon he lost all desire for material existence. Gradually, he merged his life air with the totality of air, his body with the totality of earth, and the fire within his body with the totality of fire. And then more particularly, in this way, according to the different positions of the various parts of the body, Prithvi Maharaj merged the holes of his senses with the sky, his bodily liquids such as blood and various secretions with the totality of water, and he merged earth with water, water with fire, fire with air, air with the sky, and so on. So that's the process that we're seeing. So he sits in this yoga posture. Well, this is also discussed in the second chapter. It's Canto 2, Chapter 2, which is called Lord in the Heart. Here Sukadeva Goswami is talking to Maharaj Parikshit. O King, whenever the yogi desires to leave this planet of human beings, he should not be perplexed about the proper time and place, but should comfortably sit without being disturbed, and regulating the life air should control the senses by the mind. This not being perplexed about the proper time and place, you may remember in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, it discusses that a yogi who can leave his body at will by this process. Sometimes there are favorable and unfavorable times. At a certain point, that the departing soul will go upward, called the Devayani, the path of the Devas. Or he may go down the Pitriyani, the path of the Pitris. And so by leaving at the right time. And sometimes a corridor opens up to the Brahmajyoti. And we see that sometimes these yogis, they, because of their control of their body, they can live for a long time. And I have heard that sometimes they stay alive for 500 or 700 years just because at a certain auspicious time they want to leave their bodies. But here it says the devotee does not worry about this. By fixing the mind on Krishna, then the goal is transcendental. But he can leave at will. and so, therefore, it goes on, therefore the yogi should merge his mind by his unalloyed intelligence into the living entity, and then merge the living entity into the super self. So here's talking about the subtle elements. By so doing, the fully satisfied living entity becomes situated in the supreme stage of satisfaction so that he ceases from all other activities. In that transcendental state of lokdopashanti, there is no supremacy of devastating time. The Brahma-Buddha platform also is called it, which controls even the celestial demigods who are empowered to rule over mundane creatures, and what to speak of the demigods themselves. Nor is there the mode of material goodness, or passion, or ignorance, or even the false ego, or the material causal ocean, nor the material nature. The transcendentalist desires to avoid everything godless, for they know that supreme situation, the Parampadam, which everything is related with the Supreme Lord Vishnu. Therefore, a pure devotee who is in absolute harmony with the Lord does not create perplexities but worships the lotus feet of the Lord at every moment, taking them to his heart. By the strength of scientific knowledge, Vijnana, of his practical ability, one should, so notice this is Vijnana, this is applied knowledge. So earlier we get, many places we get the description of the process of creation. So that seems like very abstract, but it actually has practical application, as we heard from today's purport, because the yogi reverses the process of creation. He unwinds the whole thing. So by the strength of scientific knowledge, one should be well situated in absolute realization and thus be able to extinguish all material desires. One should then give up the material body by blocking the air hole, that is, through which stool is evacuated, with the heel of one's foot. There it says ankles, here it says the heels. And by lifting the life air from one place to another in the six primary places. So this is the idea. One has to block the evacuating outlet so the air won't get out. And then somehow you raise the prana up through the different chakras, as been described. And the soul is usually situated in the heart, chakra of the heart. And that the soul actually goes up now from here, here, to here, between the eyes. The meditative devotee should slowly push up the life air from the navel to the heart, and from there to the chest, means from here, and there the root of the palate, there's a chakra here. He should search out the proper places with intelligence. Thereafter, the bhakti yogi should push the life air up between the eyebrows and the ear, and then blocking the seven outlets of the life air, somehow or other stopping all of the exits, he should maintain his aim for going back home, back to Godhead. If he is completely free from all desires for material enjoyment, he should then reach the cerebral hole and give up his material connections, having gone to the Supreme. So up here, there's a tiny little hole called the Brahma Rundra. You know, when you see when the baby, when they have soft spots, they're here, and also there's a soft spot here. And then when the bones form, that soft spot is actually a tiny little, like a pinhole, a little place. And there the soul goes up, and then the air goes up, pew, like that. And then the soul leaves with the life air, it all, pew, like that. And then so much heat is generated from this that the body typically bursts into fire, into flames. It burns up. That's what happened. That's described when Dhritarashtra, he did this process. Although he could only attain the Brahma Jyoti, he was not so good. Vidura had at least instructed him. But he was sitting in a hut, and the hut caught on fire. And then his queen, Gandhari, she threw herself into that fire. So there's the description in the second chapter. This is very interesting, because then it goes on, if you do this, but you still have material desires, then it describes the other way you go. You don't go directly back to Godhead. But anyway, this is the process that's mentioned here. So the yogi can actually, by this, it describes how this amalgamating or merging. So here, here it says, for example, it mentions the kani, the air. Kani means just space, actually. Like a bird is kaga. But here it's the space in the holes in the body where the senses are different outlets. So that space is then moved into akasha, the total space, merges into the total space like that. And then the various bodily fluids, all liquids, like that into the totality of the water, and so on, according to the divisions of creation. So it's a kind of winding up. At the end, when the creation is destroyed, again, it's this winding up takes place. It's pralaya. But the body is like a little universe. And so at the time of death, here is a deliberate pralaya. So you can only do this if you're detached. You have to be detached, and then you have to, in this way, reverse the process. So Prabhupada also mentions in the second chapter, in the second canto, how this creation takes place according to different divisions. So that's described here too, and it says we should know it. So I'll just go through this. Also, Kapila Dev discusses this. So that usually it says that there are 24 items or categories of things in the universe. So we start with this Mahatattva. So here, Narada Muni says, after the incarnation of the first Purusha, Karanara Navashayi Vishnu, that is to say, Karana Navashayi, the Vishnu who lies on the Karana ocean. You see, we have three ocean-lying Vishnus. Karanara Navashayi Vishnu, Garbha Udaka Shayi Vishnu, Shirodaka Shayi Vishnu, the ocean of milk, the Garbha ocean, and the Karana ocean. The Karana ocean is also known as the Mahatattva. So this is the Sarga. When they describe this process of creation, it's called Sarga. From the verb Shridj, to send forth. Because it actually all comes out of the body of the Lord. And the material energy exists when there is no creation in a very subtle form. And then it goes on. So creation always takes place from the subtle to the gross. So after the incarnation of the first Purusha, this Karanara Navashayi Vishnu, the Mahatattva, or the principle of material creation, takes place. And then time is manifest. Now time is actually, is the Kala Shakti. It's when Krishna, the Lord, glances over the material energy. First it's just it's completely inert, it's lifeless. But when he glances over the material energy, then in that glance is the Kala Shakti. And also the jivas, actually. So then time is manifest, and therefore then the three modes appear. Nature means the three qualitative appearances, they transform into activities. Material activities are caused by the Mahatattvas being agitated. At first there's transformation in the modes of goodness and passion, and later, due to the mode of ignorance, matter, its knowledge, different activities of material knowledge come into play. Here it has these three things. It's Drovya, Jnana, and Kriya. What's called Drovya Shakti, the power that creates the material energy. Jnana Shakti, the controlling knowledge. And Kriya Shakti, the activities of the material nature under that controlling knowledge. The self-centered materialistic ego. So what happens is when the three modes appear, but the three modes are actually divisions of ahankara. So the first thing that happens is ahankara. That appears in the Mahatattva, or the Mahatattva somehow. This is, I don't know, is ahankara. And then there's ahankara, thus being transformed into three features, known as the mode of goodness, passion, and ignorance, in three divisions. Namely, and then the powers that evolve matter, Drovya Shakti, knowledge of material creation, Kriya Shakti, and the intelligence that guides such material activities is Jnana Shakti. Narada, you are competent to understand this. From the darkness of false ego, the first of the five elements, namely the sky, is generated. The subtle form is the quality of sound, exactly as the seer is in relationship with the seeing. So in other words, you have false ego with goodness, passion, and ignorance. So if you take false ego with ignorance, the first thing that comes out of that is the tanmatra, rather is the gross element, the gross element. Of space, or sky here. But sky also has the tanmatra, or this object of sense perception of sound. And the relationship is like that between this. We cannot actually perceive space, but anyway, it has this sense quality of sound in it. Because the sky is transformed, then there's a further evolution, and from space or sky, you come the next thing is air, and air also has the a different quality of the qualities of the sense, the objects of the sense of touch, of the tactile of senses, such as hard, soft, heat, cold, so on, rough, smooth. So it also has sound, and also. The basic principles of the duration of life, because the air also becomes prana, the vital air in the body. So those principles are described here as sense perception, mental power, and bodily strength. Prana, Oja, and Balam. When the air is transformed in course of time and nature's course, fire is generated. And then it has form, color, and so on. Then fire is transformed, there is water, which has sense of taste, and plus the others. And then finally earth, which also bears the sense,
sense object of odors. So there's these. So right here you see you have five ingredients, you have five gross elements. Well, we go from subtle to gross. So we have sky, akash, ether, space. Then ether, and then it's hard for me to say it backwards. Ether, and then air, and fire, and water, and earth. So that's five of our ingredients. And then associated with them are the objects of the senses, which is sound, tactile objects, objects of vision, objects of odor, objects of flavor, objects of sense of taste, salty, sweet, salty, and then finally objects of the substance, smell, odors, various kinds. So now we have 10. We have 10. All this comes from the mode of ignorance. From the mode of goodness, the mind is generated. Okay? And becomes manifest. And also the 10 demigods controlling bodily movements. So these devatas, who are part of the controlling system, and the mind, they come into from the mode of goodness. And then from the mode of passion, the senses. Both the knowledge acquiring senses and the active senses. So that's another 10 elements, the senses, the jnana, jnanindriya, the instruments for knowledge. So already you see you have, from the mode of ignorance, you have the objects of the knowledge acquiring senses. Because you have your not the sense. Now note, this is not the actual, when they say the ear, he says here ear, but it really means the power to perceive sound. Because the ears itself that we are kind of constructed here are also made manifest in matter. They are the solids and liquids and so on. It's a machine. But there's an actual power of hearing, which is actually subtle, a subtle power that's attached to the subtle body, the living entity. And then also those are five, and then also we have the five karmendriya. So that's another 10. So we've got 20 altogether so far. And then intelligence. Intelligence is in the mode of passion, because intelligence is the enabling factor of the knowledge acquiring senses. The senses are actually directed by intelligence. And at the same time, it's mentioned living energy. Also the mode of passion. That is to say, prana. But prana is already there in the gross elements. So this is like a muscle. So the prana does not constitute a separate ingredient other than air. But see, prana, the air, runs the active senses. the Karmendriya. Our body is a pneumatic machine that runs by air. So here you see, notice the parallel. You have the knowledge acquiring senses, and behind them is intelligence. And you have the active senses, and behind them is prana. So that's both all that prana is, and buddhi are actually, well, intelligence. Devotees always can't understand this. Intelligence is higher than the mind. Yet, mind comes out of the mode of goodness, intelligence comes out of the mode of passion, and goodness is better than intelligence. That seems inconsistent. Well, that's the way it is. But you see, intelligence is there for every living entity. And it's connected, and it's there because of its connection with the senses. Senses are in the mode of passion. And that's intelligence has to work with any knowledge acquiring senses. Because they guide perception, and it's like the phenomena of recognition. See, people see different things. Take a dog. Sometimes the dogs have been associated with human beings for a long time. And they get along very well with human beings because basically dogs are pack animals. They're inherently social. And that ability to be social makes them get along with human beings. But the dogs, as far as the dogs are concerned, you have to imagine their mentality is not very sophisticated. So they perceive human beings as a kind of dog. A dog with hands. So they think we're dogs too. Just a more interesting kind of a dog. It has hands, can do things like scratch you and feed you and so on. Because their basic thing is, their basic category is dog and not dog. So therefore, what we are in the dog category. You see, so they have that intelligence which allows them to discriminate between dog and not dog. Well, in this way. Intelligence guides the senses, how they perceive and recognize arguments and sort of categorize the world into different things. So without the guidance of intelligence, the knowledge acquiring senses could not work at all. Just as without prana, the active powers could not work. So there we have our 10 senses, right? That's 10. And then we have the sense objects and the gross elements. So that's 20. And then we already have false ego, and we have mind and intelligence. That's 23. And the fourth element is the 24th element is contaminated consciousness. So there you have it. It's very, very organized. So it goes from subtle to gross. This creation takes place from subtle to gross. And so as far as the gross elements of the body, by some kind of meditative process, All the differentiated air in the body is merged together in air, the liquids into liquid, fire into fire, and so on. And then they're reversed. The earth is amalgamated or merged back into water, and then the water itself into fire, and then fire, excuse me, fire into earth, water, fire, into air, fire into air, and air into ether, and then that's what happens. And this is so that's what he's describing here, this unwinding. And he says this is the sequence by which and it's also mentioned in the second let me go back a little, it's mentioned in the second canto. When this is chapter 2, how the subtle elements are wound up too. Right? We read that. Yeah, text 16. The yogi should merge his mana. By his intelligence, swabhutya, by his own intelligence, into the chaita jnana, into the living entity. And then the move that merged the living entity into the super self. And also on the subtle level, this is taking place. And ceases. So that on the subtle level, there's some kind of winding up. And then on the gross level, also, there's winding up takes place. Now, how you do it, I have no idea. And neither do I have any idea of what it feels like or what's actually going on. But anyway, it's a powerful process. The yogis have this ability to control like this. And the ability to do this by a kind of meditation. I mean, it isn't that their body turns, evaporates in front of your eyes. It's not like that. But somehow all the powers of these things are wound up. And then the soul leaves, along with the prana, the life air goes, and the body itself is consumed with fire. So that's what takes place. Prabhupada said it's important we should know this, so there it is. So it also, and so you may say, this is people will say today, because this version of things is very, very different of modern ideas of the elements of the universe. You may say, well, it's just some primitive speculation. But the fact is, people are able to apply it, and apply it in such a way that they can leave their bodies at will. By using this as a guide, by searching out the places with intelligence. How do you search out the various places with intelligence? Like the various chakras? Well, you have to know where they are. Somebody has to have shown, this is what intelligence does, is it takes this direction, look at this, look at that. So you know how to do all these things by intelligence. So people cannot do this. You take a modern scientist and you say people leave their bodies like this, they don't believe it because they can't do it. Because they don't have the science for doing it. They have a different division of the universe, which maybe you can do things with that, but you can't do this. Of course, then they'll just deny people cannot leave their bodies like this. Although there is a medical mystery that's currently recognized, a scientific mystery And that is very well documented, that from time to time, people seem to die by spontaneous combustion. Now, they're not maybe yogis, but it might be that somehow or other, maybe they're going to leave their bodies anyway, and it happens to be at the same time, but they... But see, how can a body... This was actually described at least as early as the 19th century, because the author Charles Dickens, in one of his novels, I forgot which one, I can't remember the title of it. One of the characters dies of spontaneous combustion. He ignites and just dies like this. It's a really fabulous description of the people coming in the room, and here's this kind of weird greasy soot everywhere. But a guy dies of spontaneous combustion, and then readers wrote in protest. Dickens novels used to come out in magazines in serial form. And this created a big uproar. They had this character die of spontaneous combustion. And so when the book was published, he had a whole preface justifying this. And he cited all these instances already of people who had died of spontaneous combustion. And then I read a magazine article about it, and where it describes, they don't mention Dickens, they didn't know anything about that, but modern instances of this, where people have died, and described a lady in Miami or Miami Beach who left her body, like a woman in her 60s or 70s. And she was sitting, what was found is that there was a fire when they went in there. The fire took place, she was sitting at the dining room table, and the heat was, all that was left was one of her feet was left. But the heat was so intense that it actually melted the silverware on the table. And there was an area of total. You see, because to burn a human body takes a very hot fire, it's mostly liquid. So you have to have a very intense fire. You know, when they cremate bodies, you have to have a hot fire to burn them. But somehow or other, so she was completely burnt up. But the fire was hot enough to burn her body, but somewhat contained. The thing near the silverware melted. There are many instances like this. You just type spontaneous combustion, death like this, and this is Google, you'll probably come up with all this stuff. So nobody knows how is it possible with so much heat without an outside source to come out of the human body. But here are instances of it. And I'm sure by now people have pointed out that yogis used to do this. At the time I first read about this, nobody, weren't enough people around who knew these things. So it can happen. It's definitely a medical mystery. Any questions? Anything else about this topic? Winding up, how to wind up the creation? Yeah, it's not very practical for us. What you have to understand anyway, our process of leaving the body is different. We don't have to worry about it. The idea is the same, but the process is there of focusing the mind on Krishna very intensely and being free from all material attachment. Because it's true, I guess we're very attached to our own bodies, first of all. And you have to let it go, just give it up. If you're still attached to the body, first of all, it makes leaving very difficult. You have to let it go. And If you also keep these attachments, then you'll come back and take another body. This is very important that you understand at least this map of the subtle elements and the gross elements being provided for the soul by the material energy. One interesting aspect of the story of creation is how everything is for the sake of the living entities. Because the first thing that appears, the first ingredient that appears in the Mahatattva is false ego, ahankara, so that the living entities can have their material identity. Right? So there's false ego. And then that false ego is in three divisions. And all of those to make bodies for the living entities to enjoy, and their senses and the sense objects. Just all for everybody to work out their karma. I'll go back to Godhead. So the whole thing is for the sake of, for the purpose of, the living entity. But the living entities aren't part of it. They're a separate energy. So one has to see this very clearly. It gives us a picture of the universe that helps us get out of it. We can navigate with it. It's like a map. One has to know this very, very, very well. Even though we don't leave our bodies in this particular way, still one has to understand very clearly how I'm not the mind, how I'm not the gross body. And one can actually have realized knowledge of this by refraining for any unnecessary sense gratification. Because it's the unnecessary, it's some sense gratification is necessary. You have to breathe. Every time you take a breath, it's sense gratification. So without some sense some satisfaction senses will die. But one keeps it to a minimum. That's the idea. And whatever, we maintain a healthy body for the service of the Lord, then even though it's sense gratification, it's not entangling. One doesn't become attached. But if one enjoys the senses just for the sake of thinking I'm the enjoyer, then it becomes impossible to separate, and become detached from the body and from the mind. So it's very important to know this. Also for us at the time of death, because in another way one has to give up both the gross and the subtle bodies. I mean, freely relinquish them with a secure establishment in an identity that doesn't depend upon them. Then the giving up the body can be properly done. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.